All right, we ready to get started? 7:20, okay. I gotta push number one, I think. Woohoo! Technology. Sweet. Okay, so last session of the conference, I'm standing between you and beer. I get it? So we'll make this quick, right? I know one of my coworkers is like, I'm having a drink right now, I'm not waiting for you. Okay, go. So we are going to talk about SQL Server 2014 hybrid features. So we're going to talk about five of them. I called it the top five. There's probably, and a couple of these features are not really specific to 2014 because they were introduced in some of these were introduced in 2012 or 2012 SP or CU2 or 3 or something like that. One of them was introduced in 2012, but enhanced in 2014. Three of them are new, so we're going to talk about five scenarios that I think are they're really cool. So first of all, quick round of applause for our sponsors, and please don't forget to evaluate the session, right? Because that they make us put this slide up just because that tells us how we did and what kind of sessions you like for next year and don't like, right? All right, so I don't like putting up these brag me slides, so it's not who I am, right? So there's my blog, there's my email address, there's my Twitter, right? If there's any questions about what we talk about today, want any information, please reach out to me. I'm happy to talk more. This is just, I'm happy to talk with you after the fact or provide more information. There's how you reach me. Okay? All right, so with that, let's get started. I don't know if we're going to go this, we probably won't go the full 75 minutes. It just depends on, how much, how many questions you have or, how deep we go. But, when we're done, we're done. Okay. SQL Server. If you look at the history of SQL Server, right? Everybody thinks of SQL Server about 2000, right? Because I don't know if anybody takes SQL 6.5 or 6 seriously. Anybody have 6.5 running? No, do you have the disks? Okay. All right, good. 2000, anybody have 2000 running? Oh, okay. All right, well, I guess we need to talk. All right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Easier said than done, huh? Yeah. So, if you look at kind of the evolution of SQL Server, right? There's been some focuses, some specific focuses since 2000, right? And a lot of it has been things like performance, programmability, right? BI was a big push, and so you start to see the evolution of what's going on. And lately, over the past since 2008, were things like BI, right? And that has been a continued, 2008, 2008 R2 has been everything about data insights into your data, BI, Power BI, data warehousing, things like that. But lately, they have focused on a lot things like since 2012 have been things like performance, right? So there's several themes that they have been working on. Things like always on is one, right? And performance, right? Is just an uptime and things like that. Another one since 2012 has been and 2008 and really 2008 R2 was cloud, right? So things like right mouse click. If you go into the generate scripts wizard, you can generate a script for Windows Azure SQL Database, right? It wasn't in 2008, but it was in 2008 R2, right? How many knew that? You could, in the generate scripts wizard, script for SQL Azure. Do you guys know that? And it's really good. Most people don't know that. It's just in the generate scripts wizard, one of the properties instead of on-prem is script for the cloud. Awesome, right? From a migration standpoint. So, and that theme is continued in 2014 with a lot of things, right? So, hybrid cloud optimized. We're going to talk, and that's where we're going to focus today, right? The three pillars that we call for SQL Server 2014 have followed into three categories: performance, insights into your data, and cloud. Right, these are the three things that SQL Server 2014 focus on. Right, mission critical performance was all about two things: the in-memory OLTP. You guys familiar with that? That's awesome. We just did a session earlier today on that. right? That's sweet. And then the clustered column store, right? The enhancements there. That was introduced in 2012, but they enhanced it for better performance in 2014, right? Faster insights into any data. That's things like the Power BI components, right? Power View, not PowerShell. You know, Power View, Power Query, Power Map, right? Things like that let you get better insights in your data. You know, plugging into HD Insight, right? Things like that. We're focusing on today this last tab, right? Hybrid cloud, right? And we're going to talk about several scenarios, five scenarios specifically around the hybrid cloud. What does this mean for you, right? And we'll talk about these in several aspects. But just as a quick introduction, then we'll get into the five. You know, so things like simplified backup, you know, being able to say, hey, how do I back up, right? Instead of backing up on-prem and doing tapes and things like that, how do I manage my backups and how can I back up to the cloud? And then restore, right? Things like cloud disaster recovery. How many of you guys have companies that have a major data center and then spend an awful lot of money on a redundant data center? Yeah, a lot of you, right? That's for disaster recovery scenarios. If a meteorite comes and slams into your one data center, you need a redundant backup data center, and you spend a lot of money on that data center. We're going to talk about this in terms of the cloud, right? And how you can leverage and lower your TCO by using the cloud as a backup for your primary data center, right? We'll talk about that. And then cloud bursting and extending your on-prem apps, things like if I have a process, I need to extend that. Let me extend that to the cloud instead of having all this underutilized hardware sitting there. Let me push that to the cloud. And then things like SQL Server and Windows Azure Virtual Machine, you know, Migration Wizard. So this is one of the new Migration Wizard. This is one of the ones that was introduced in 2012. You could right mouse click and say, you know, deploy database to Windows Azure SQL database, right? In 2014, they added a new menu option that says deploy database to Windows Azure VM, right? Awesome. We'll talk about that, right? And then things for scaling out into Windows Azure SQL database and things like that. So these are, you know, there's some overall messaging here about, look, we're very serious about this cloud hybrid scenario. So with that, here's the five things we're going to talk about today, right? And we'll be very demo heavy, right? Backup to the cloud, dynamic backups. What does that mean? Data files in the cloud, disaster recovery and migration. These are the five topics we're going to talk about today. And we're going to talk about them in terms of what, how, and why. What are they? Definition and details. What are they? How, the creation and configuration. How do you set it up? How do you make it work? What are the steps to get them to work? And then why? Why would you use these? Right? What are the scenarios around using these? And what application would we use these for? Right? So we're going to talk about in terms of what, why, and how. What, how, and why. Right? So with that, let's begin by talking about backup to cloud. Okay? So backup to cloud. Two scenarios, right? I want to back up my database. I've got a database on-prem. I also have a database in a Windows Azure Virtual Machine, right? So I hope you're okay with this. We're going to talk about a lot of Windows Azure. Sorry, Microsoft Azure. They renamed it. Microsoft Azure, right? But so on-prem, I got a database on-prem. I got a database in a Windows Azure Virtual Machine, and I want to back those up, right? I want to back those up in terms of either scheduled or things like that. And I don't have to worry about disk space. I don't have to worry about costs. I don't want to, well, to some degree, I don't want to have to worry about costs, but I don't have to worry about disk space. I don't want to have to worry about running out of disk space, right? I don't want to have to worry about this huge cost of my SANs back there, right? And disks and tape backups and sending things off to Iron Mountain or whatever it is for secure backups, right? I don't have to worry about, you know, high redundancy. If I do a backup to a tape or a disk, I only have one copy. What happens to that? Right, I don't have to worry about these things. So this is what the backup in the cloud gives us. Okay, so what is it? Right, backup restore times are proportional to bandwidth. This is the ability to say I am backing up not to local, but I am backing up to the cloud. Right, what are the benefits the cloud give me? Right, there's several benefits of the cloud. Right, almost unlimited space. We'll talk about this in the why slide. Right. So I don't have to, you know, I don't want to have to worry about space and things like that. So I want to back up. So, but the what we're talking about here is backup time latency, right? Am I backing up an on-prem database or am I backing up a database in the Windows Azure Virtual Machine, right? So things like the time to back up versus the latency, right? So there could be a latency for backing up, but typically we really don't care about that as long as my backup succeeds and I have multiple copies of that backup, right? On-prem, I back up, I've got one copy, and I may back that up to tape. I have one copy. In the cloud, I can have multiple copies of that backup, right? And I don't care how long it takes because I'm backing up to the cloud, right? So it's consistent. So depending on the latency, depending on your bandwidth to the cloud, depends on how long it's going to take. But the key is that technically, we don't care, right? As long as the backup succeeds, we don't care. We just want that backup to go, right? So how do you set this up? You need a couple things. Who's familiar with Windows? Yeah. Oh, that's true, right? We'll talk about restore in a little bit, right? We will talk about restore. And the restore can be, right, because we're automating to some degree the backup. And that's a good point. So I don't care that – all I care about is the backup happens, right? But if I need to restore, there's several ways I can restore, right? So I can either bring that down because it's going to do a backpack, and we'll show this in a demo. But then I can bring that down. There's several ways I can bring that down for speed and then restore it, right? So just several ways to do that. Okay, and we can talk about that. All right, who's familiar with Windows Azure? Microsoft Windows Azure. Okay, few of you. Okay, so when you jump out to a demo, I'm going to show you some of this, just for those that aren't familiar, and then we'll talk about, this will make sense when we talk about the why portion, right? All right, so you do need a Windows Azure storage account, because that's where your backups are going, whether you're backing up from a Windows Azure virtual machine or you're backing up from on-prem. This is where it's going. And there's some benefits to backing up to a storage account. We'll talk about those as well when we jump out to the demo, right? Then you do need credentials. Create credential, T-SQL, right? Create credential, done. You do need this because that's what you're connecting to back up to the cloud, right? And you can do this in several ways. You can use T-SQL. You can use SMO. Anybody familiar with SMO here? Right? Good. You can use SMO. Or you can use PowerShell. Any PowerShell people? You know, most people aren't afraid to raise their hand. PowerShell, right? So you can use either one of those, right? So let me show you how this works. And we'll actually jump out into code and show you, but just for a quick introduction. Got to create a credential, and that credential is basically creating a secure connection, a credential, to your cloud storage account. I'll show you this in the demo, right? And then the syntax is extremely similar to a typical backup. Backup database, but instead of backing up to a device or to a file, you're just backing up to a URL. Woohoo! Right? Awesome. Right? And then you're just saying with credential, and then just packing up, and passing, either a media name or a media description if you want that metadata associated to your backup. But the syntax is extremely similar. A lot of these things, in fact, all of these five scenarios we're talking about, you don't have to learn anything new. Right? Same syntax, right? This is T-SQL. So create a credential and then just backup database. The only difference is you're backing up to a URL, not to a device or a file, right? You can also use SMO, right? So there you go. So if you're .NET developers, there you go, right? So my backup, new backup, done, right? And then you're just passing it. You have to create the credentials. So same credentials, and you're passing in the credential strings. And then you're just backing it up, and you're backing it up again to a URL. So same thing. And then PowerShell is the same way, right? I'm defining a URL. I'm defining my credentials. There's the server. Go, right? And I'll show you what the servers look, the server syntax looks like. But that is. So three ways to back this up, right? So with that, let's jump out, and I'll show you a demo. Okay, so hopefully what I need to do is, oh, I should have done this a little earlier. Let me connect. Oh, and you can't see my screen. This happens every time. For some reason, it jumps in and extends the picture, not the. All right, so I do have to. I'm connected. I want to disconnect, and yes, and I want to connect to the VPN. All right, 1 second. So what I'm doing is I'm connecting because the server I'm running this from is not local. I'm connecting to a server running in Redmond on our network, which is this one. What happened? There we go. All right, so what I'm doing, I'm RDPing into a server that's running SQL Server 2014. Hopefully the connection here, the bandwidth is awesome. Everybody cross your fingers that the internet works. Everybody cross your fingers here that the internet works. Doesn't look like it's working. Oh. All right, let's try that again. I'm connected. Oh, you're kidding me. Really? These demos aren't going to go so well if I can't connect. There we go. Woo! All right. All right. So let's fire up SQL Server Management Studio here. All right, and while that's going, so again, let me fire this up. So the first thing we said is you need a storage account, manage.windowsazure.com. So this is Windows Azure, right? This is Microsoft's cloud platform, and there's a number of platform as a service and infrastructure as a service services that pertain to Windows Azure. Right, and one of these, and before we jump into the VM, I'm going to show you this, because one of the things I said and alluded to was that if I'm doing backups, whatever I'm doing, my backups on-prem, I'm either backing up to a file or a disk, and I only have one copy of that unless I physically, manually, or programmatically make copies of that backup, correct? Right? What happens if that backup's corrupted, or what happens if I lose one of those backups, right? And hopefully you're making copies, or hopefully you're doing backups, right? So with this, one of the things was that you need a storage account. So these are all the services in Windows Azure, right? So there's virtual machines, very easy to spin up virtual machine. We'll actually look at that in one of the demos. Then we have a storage account. And a storage account has abstracts like, so here's a bunch of storage accounts. We'll look one in the Northeast, right? And they have abstracts like blobs, tables, and queues, right? Blobs are just like, you know, like file, video, document. I can store blobs in the cloud. The great thing about this service is that I get unlimited storage. When I create an account, I can put as much data up there as I want. And I only pay for the amount of data I have up there, right? And so if 1 gig of storage up in Windows Azure for 1 month is about 5 cents, right? Much cheaper than buying a bunch of disk and SAN on-prem, right? Right, much cheaper. So I can store 1 gig file up in the cloud in blob storage for 1 month for 5 cents. Okay, 5 cents. So why wouldn't I use this to back up my database, right? Because if I back it up and I can create multiple copies, I'm going to put my database, my backups here, right? The great thing about this is that by default, when I create an account, right, it geo-replicates, okay? Meaning, everything is in triplicate. When I copy something up to the cloud, I get 3 copies of that. I have a primary and 2 replica. And by default, it's geo-redundant, meaning if I created a storage account, so there's 10 Azure data centers in the world, 2 here in Europe, Amsterdam and Dublin, 4 in the US, 4 in Asia, right? They're working on putting more here in Europe, right? By setting geo-redundancy, that means is that when I copy something up to Azure Blob Storage, my primary and 1 replica, so if I say I'm going to create copy it up to the Amsterdam data center, my primary and replica get copied to Amsterdam, and the second copy gets copied to Dublin, right? So for free, I get higher SLA. So if something happens to that main data center, I still have a copy, right? You can't do that with SQL backups on-prem unless you do it manually, right? But I get that automatically just by backing up to the cloud, right? So these are benefits of the cloud, right? So with that, you guys, does that make sense? So you understand the benefits of Azure, right? I'm going to copy stuff up. So here, I got SQL Server. Backup database to Azure, right? Yes. Sorry. Yeah, go ahead. Yes. So the question is, if I back up to Europe, will my data end up in some other data center? And the answer is no, right? You specify where you're backing it up to, and it will stay there. We don't copy it anywhere else. Oh, okay, yeah, so let's, yeah. So it's making three copies, right? So, yeah, so you get three copies. One, the primary, and one of the replicas goes to Amsterdam. If I have it set for geo-redundancy, right? The third copy will go into the next nearest data center, which would be Dublin. We do not copy it anywhere else. If you don't want that, then just say just click on locally redundant, and all three copies will go in the same data center. Okay? Does that answer your question? Right? We do that just for a higher SLA, right? If some, for whatever reason, if, you know, and it rarely happens. It's happened, I think, one time. A data center went, because of a certificate issue, I think the data center went down. People couldn't connect for a few hours, I think, right? Something like that, right? But if, for those people that had another copy in another data center, they're still up and running. So, for example, a meteorite hits Amsterdam, right? Then I'm not trying to jinx you, right? But let's say, you know, for something happens to the Amsterdam data center, if you have a copy in Dublin, you're still up and running, right? But you don't have to do that. Just set it to locally redundant. That's true. So there are legal ramifications for some of this. Like, for example, there's, I think, Germany's one country that says we can't have data outside the borders of our country, right? What's that? Say that again? Yeah, the Patriot Act. Yeah, right. But a lot of times that's simply a discussion is with them and with the customers to say, here's how we're securing your data, right? Just because you're putting it into the cloud. And this is a whole cloud discussion. I don't want to get off on a tangent, but this is a whole cloud discussion, how we secure your data. Just because we put it up there doesn't mean everybody has access to it. Just because you put it up there doesn't even mean Microsoft has access to it, right? So it's a whole security discussion thing. Right, but yeah, there are some possibly some limitations from that standpoint. Right, does that answer your question? Okay, all right, so let's go on. All right, so here is the syntax for backing up to the cloud. Right, so I'm essentially saying create a credential if it doesn't exist, and give it a key, and I just pass it a key. Okay, and I'm calling it my credential that with identity. And so my credential, let me tell you where these come from. Right, so where does this come from, and where does this whole string come from? Right, this comes from the account. Right, this is how, again, from a security perspective, just because I create a storage account doesn't mean everybody has access to it. Right, so if you want access to it, either through an application or through T-SQL or something like that, I have to pass it a name, and then pass it either one of these keys. And if either of these keys get compromised, I can regenerate and a new set of keys, right? So think of that's Scott Klein Northeast, right? I pass it one of those keys. So if we look at that, is that what it is? Oh, Scott Klein West, right? So I passed it the Scott Klein West set of keys because I have a storage account in West US. So I pass it that and that storage account, and then I create my credential, right? So let's what I'm going to do is back up. What am I backing up? I've got a database out here called Contoso. There it is. So before I back this up, let me go over to my West. And I'm backing it up to a container called Backpack. All right, so let me go into West to containers, into Backpack. No blobs yet, right? So what I'm going to do is let me run this. So first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to create the credential. Let me create their credential if it doesn't exist. So now from a security perspective, credentials. There it is, my cloud credential. Right, you see that? Oh, that doesn't work. So there's my cloud credential. Right? So now I can go, okay, with that cloud credential, let me back that database up. And so all I'm saying is, all right, back it up. Instead of to a disk or a file, let me back it up to the cloud. This isn't a very big database. So there you go. That only took, that didn't take too long, right? Again, it's not a very big database. Okay? So let's go back out and check that out. Let me refresh this. Let me just go back. Go back into Backpack. There it is. You guys see that? With the date of today. Right? 4/17. Right? So not a very big database, but it backed up in just a matter of seconds, right? But again, the benefits of this is that I can back up and I can use Azure Cloud Storage to back up my databases, right? Then I can restore from there. Does that make sense? And so it only took just a few lines of code to back that up, right? And the other side of this is that I can actually take this and actually schedule this. You know, I can create an agent on-prem and schedule this backup just like I can everything else, right? So it's not a manual process. I can actually schedule this, right? Okay. So let's go back. So why would I do this? Let's talk the whys now. Okay? Okay. Why? Near bottomless storage, meaning when you create an account, you can upload as much data as you want up there, right? They say near bottomless is because at some point the Azure data center may run out of, you know, we're monitoring disk space, and it could be potential that even the data center runs out, but not going to happen. We just say near bottomless be just for SLA. But you can upload as much data, terabytes and petabytes of data up there, so you have unlimited, you don't have to worry about running out of disk space, okay? Again, offsite geo-redundant, meaning three available copies if you want them, right? So if one, you know, if something happens, you still have your backups, right? And you can schedule these, okay? So no provisioning. I don't have to provision anything. I just go, right? It's just a matter of seconds I'm running. Don't have to worry about backup devices or files or SANs or anything like that. Let Microsoft manage that and just back it up. How many of you like doing maintenance and management on SANs and things like that? Anybody? Nobody. Well, it's like it is job security, right? But most people don't like that, right? You want just worry about, I want to do a backup and have it succeed, right? And so media safety, right? Decay free. You don't have to worry about things like becoming stale or out of date or being corrupted and things like that. And because it's your account, you have access to all these backups. Nobody else, right? Unless I hand you that key, that name and key, you don't have access to that backup. Okay, so it's secure, right? So there's certain benefits to this. Does this make sense? Right? Yes. Is it encrypted? The backups are not, but you can do backup encryption, right? But the backups are not, right? By default, the backups are not. So are you familiar with DAC packs? Anybody, SQL people, DAC packs, DAC framework, right? So in 2012, they released what's called the backpack, right? A DAC pack is just a little unit of like an MSI that you can use to install your, back up your database and restore it somewhere else type of thing, right? But it just includes schema. In 2012, they did a backpack, same artifact, but it includes schema and data, right? So the data is encrypted. So that backup created. If you can actually, unlike a .back file, you can't crack open a .back. You can actually look at the .back, but you cannot view the data. The data is encrypted. So yes, by default, yeah, it actually is, the data is encrypted, right? Yes. So that's what I'm saying. So you could schedule this and say, yeah, give me a backup every day. Right. This was just a manual, but I could put this in a job and back up every day, right? Every week, or do something. The problem, one of the limitations of this is that you can't. It's a full backup, right? There's no differential, no transactional, things like that, right? If you need that, still use on prem, but this is, give me a full backup. It's really fast, right? But you can still schedule it and say, give me, I can back up every day if I want. Yes. I'm sorry? Yes. I can't tell you where, but yes, it is on the roadmap. They've been talking about it for a while, right? So yes. All right, let's keep going. So dynamic backup, right? This is an interesting one, right? Because the backup we just talked about was I either need to do it manually or schedule it, right? This is an interesting one because this says I don't want to have to worry about it. It's the same kind of concept, same scenario, but don't let me worry about when to back it up, right? I want somebody else to manage it for me. And that somebody is SQL Server in this case, right? So same thing. There's a little, we'll show you the code, right? We can either do this. So in these scenarios, I'm running from on-prem, right? But if you've got in all of these examples, if you're running a Windows Azure Virtual Machine with SQL, you can do the same thing. I'm just running this from a local just to make it easy, right? But in this scenario, this is a different scenario in that I don't want to have to worry about when this gets backed up, right? So this is it's a little agent, and you don't have to install the agent. It does it automatically for you that says, I'm gonna manage the backup for you. There's probably pros and cons to this, but you know, this is a little agent that says, let me manage it, okay? It's got built-in intelligence, right? So right now, there's no UI for this. The intelligence is built in to determine what's the frequency, how heavy are you using the database, right? And then it'll decide when to back up, right? So it could be every minute, every half hour, every hour. There's no UI for you to determine and schedule the backups. That's going to determine that for you based on usage. And it is transactionally consistent. It will just do the backups for you, right? So things like, and I'm not going to walk through this, but basically it says it's not time frequently based, right? There's no plan, but basically it says, hey, based on the usage, and if it's a heavy usage, we'll back up more frequently. If there's not a lot of usage, we'll back up less frequently, right? So things like that, right? It does have file retention, so it's going to say, all right, and we'll set this. So unlike the first example, this has some intelligence built into it to say, all right, back up, but only keep that backup around for 30 days or 60 days or things like that. So it has some of this garbage collection scenario built in where it says, I don't need this anymore, let me keep it around. I don't need to keep it around anymore, right? So the requirements, again, same thing. Storage account, credentials, so nothing different, but right now it's only T-SQL, so you can't do SMO or PowerShell, but same thing. You need a storage account and a credential. Make sense? Right? So let's jump out and do a demo. Okay. Oops. Hold on a minute. Let me switch screens again. Yep. All right. Whoops. Okay. So let me close this one and let me open another one. This is some files. Oh, manage automated. Okay. So same thing, right? I do need to go create that storage account, but what I'm going to do is go create the credentials and then basically say, okay, go. So I'm going to say it's a new smart admin SP set DB backup, built-in system store procedures that, right? So this is all through T-SQL. Like I said earlier, there is no UI, okay? So this says backup this name, backup to this storage account. I want to keep this backup for 30 days, and there's my credential name and enable backup, and then I can say with encryption or no encryption, for example, if I want to encrypt the backup, okay? And then I don't need to do this if I want to show, because we are logging the events. Every time we do this backup, we're logging the events, right? And then if I want to turn it off, I just set enable backup to 0. Okay? Now, I could run this, but the problem is, and this is not a downside. It could be a downside, right? Once I've created my credential and run that code, it's off and running, right? That agent's installed or that agent is enabled, and it's monitoring that database, right? From there, it's completely hands-off. There's no UI for me to manage other than the event logs. There's no way for me to look to see what's going on, right? So I can't open up the jobs in SQL Server. I can't open up anything and look to see what's going on. The only way to know what's going on is to go into the event logs. If I want to turn it off, I run that statement down there, turn it off. The way this works is The agent runs. It's monitoring the usage of your database. If it's a high transaction, if you've just a lot of usage, it will back up more frequently. If not, it'll back up less frequently. So the two ways to see what's going on is either look at the event logs or go into your backup directory and look at your backup files. Right? That will tell you how often it's backing up. Okay? Does this make sense? Right? Good and bad, I think, a little bit here, right? Because on the good side, I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to schedule it. There's no human interaction, but at the same time, I'm like, how do I know what's going on? Right? Yes. Currently, no. No, but that has been talked about, right? This is just a fire and go, right? So there's no notification yet, right? Because one of the things that they've got feedback on very early is I need notification that a backup happened, or I need to know, be able to schedule a job or things like that. 2004. This is all SQL Server 2014. This one, no, because SQL Azure is a little differently. Did anybody watch Build here? Right, Build, they announced the ability to do so. There's backups in Azure. The restore is called point in time restore, right? So this is not there. And reason because you can't do an agent on SQL Azure, so that's why not here. We're focusing primarily on on-prem, right? But you can sort of do the same thing in Azure through a different way, right? So I can do the same thing in Azure, just a little differently, right? If you want to know, I'll show you after. Yeah. Yes, because if you look at this, it is MSDB, right? And so that's where everything's being stored, right? So the logs are pulling from there.
Okay, so when you have to do a restore, MSDB can help you generate the restore files from the MSDB backup.
Well, so from a backup perspective, so again, this is doing a dot backpack, right? So the restore is going to be a little differently. We're not restoring from MSDB, right? Okay, and I can show you that. Makes sense. So does this make sense? Right? Again, it's the manual backup that we saw, but it's managed, so it's kind of an automatic. It's less hands-on, but no way to do some of the customization that we might want. So this is just configure fire and go. And manage it through some of the DMVs or through the event log to see what's going on. Okay, but I think this has some benefit, right? Things like so. Let's talk about the why. How much time do I have? All right. So the why. I'll give you these slides. I'm not going to walk through these. But, again, flexibility and configuration, no need to manage your backup policy. This is just fire and go, like I've said, right? Built-in intelligence to determine how often to back up, how often to retain it, right? Let's see. So I can, again, you get the leverage of the, unlimited, near unlimited space in Windows Azure. You get the three copies again, so you got the high availability, things like that, right? All right. All right, let's move on. Oh, V1 limitation. So I'm not going to go through these, but so this will only back up to Windows Azure, database backups and transactional backups. So it doesn't do differential. It's just the database backups. Recovery models, no support for log shipping, database mirroring, always on, support all on the cloud. Right. So I'm not going to go through these, but you'll have the slides. These are all no-brainers. So let's talk about data files in the cloud. This is scenario three, and this is an interesting one for me, right? I like this one. And this one is, I think, sort of a, you guys might go, not happening, right? This one might be a little of a hard sell, but so bear with me, and let's start thinking about the scenarios this might fit in, okay? This is the ability to say, when I create my database, right. Again, two scenarios. Same scenario as the first two. You can either do it on-prem or in a Windows Azure VM with SQL running in it. Both scenarios. This says take my MDB and my MDB or MDF and LDF, and don't put them on-prem. Put them in the cloud. Okay? So this is kind of a mind shift thing, right? Because we're all used to working here. There's my data files. This says, put those files, put my data file and log files, not on-prem, but in the cloud. Okay? So think about that for a second, right? Okay? So basically, I'm taking it, and I'm taking a DB, and I'm basically in Windows Azure Storage, right? Nothing different. Okay? Or I can do Node 2, right? And then what allows me to do is say, all right, well, I've now got that MDB. This is and this is another benefit, right? So I've got my I've got database one, right? And my MDF and LDF are in the cloud, right? I can then go to a second server, wherever that server is, and attach that same MDF and LDF, right? So the question is, does this feature allow me to do an MDF on-prem and the LDF? Oh, sorry, MDF in the cloud, LDF on-prem. You know what? I don't know, but we can try that. That's a good question. You got me thinking. We'll have to try that. So this guy in the back and then you. Yeah. I'm a little louder, sorry. Oh, a max file size? Yeah, oh yeah. Again, unlimited space. So the benefit of this, again, is I'm not limited to disk space on-prem, right? That database could be almost any size, okay? So I don't have to worry about running out of disk space on-prem. It's just my MDF or LDF are in the cloud, so they can grow as big as they want, right? Okay, this guy and then you in the back, and you might have to yell. Oh, in this one? Yeah, I would say, yeah, probably. But so that's why, so what you could do is have a SQL VM and just doing the backup, right? That way it's not, right? So yeah, so I would not do that, but I would have a SQL VM. And it doesn't matter, you could just do some simple small VM that's costing a couple dollars a month to do the backups, right? All right, yeah. Okay. Yep. Okay. I get it. Latency, right? Latency is going to be an issue, right? Or possibly be an issue, right? But so these are things like, I'm not saying everybody run out and try this. Well, actually, I am. But I'm saying this might not be an, you know, do testing. What's your latency going to be, right? So you're going to get better latency or better performance by saying, all right, if I'm sitting here in Amsterdam, I'm not going to put my database files in West US data center. Not happening, right? So you definitely want to put them as close to you as possible, but that still may be, you know, it depends on your application, what your requirements are, what your SLA is for performance and things like that, right? So test it. What I am saying is go out and test it, but I'm not saying this is the best solution for everything. Definitely not saying that, right? But go test it, right? Because there are certain benefits to that. Yes? Yeah. Okay. No more trick questions. See, I don't have to think about that. I'm going to say yes, and here's why, right? Because where's SQL Server running? Locally, right? Right. What happens when you run in memory? Where does it store the? In memory, it takes the table and creates a DLL. Where's it going to store that DLL? Locally. We're just going to take that data locally, right? So I would say yes, right? The only difference here, the caveat, is in this scenario, right? Where you have to, where you're reattaching, I don't think that would work. But in this scenario, right? Because if you think about it, and I'm just going to say with a caveat that I have not tested this, but I know what I'm doing when I get back to the hotel tonight, right? Because I can say, it doesn't matter if you think about what SQL does in that scenario and in memory, it just takes that table and doesn't make it disk-based anymore. So what it's going to do is say, all right, I'm going to remove it as a disk-based because now it's not stored in memory. I'm going to create it as a DLL locally. See, now you got me thinking. Because now you got data I'm going to have to try this, right? So I'm not going to say yes or no. I'm thinking it would work too, but I definitely want to try it. I don't want to lie to you, so that's what I'm saying. I think it would be cool if it worked because that would be an awesome blog post, right? But I want to test it first. I want to say yes, and I'm pretty sure it would say yes. But you had a question behind her. Okay. Yeah, so instead, what the benefit of running SQL in the VM versus on-prem? Yeah, can I get back to can I get back to that question? I will definitely answer that before the end, right? Because that's a little different discussion. Because there's probably somebody else asking that in here, right? And I do want to get to that. There's some benefits. All right, so let me jump out and let's do a demo. This is a little different, right? So considerations. You want to set delay durability equal disabled and allow it, right? So this would be a good candidate for custom call store indexes and things like that, right? We're running out of time. I want to get to a demo and then get to your question because other people are probably asking that as well. So let's do a demo. This is a little different, right? This requires not just a storage account and not just a credential, but it does require extra layer security because not only, if you think about it, unless your database and columns, unless you're using TDE, right, your data is going to be unencrypted in the cloud. Now, it does talk 443 and 1433 and things like that, right? But your data is now sitting open in Windows Azure, right? It's not a backpack. It's an MDF, right? So how do we secure that? So this requires one extra step, okay? So that one extra step, as soon as I switch over here, is the following. So if you're familiar with Windows Azure blobs or Windows Azure storage, you can put a shared access signature on top of Azure table and Azure blob, right? This shared access signature says who has access to the data. And anybody that doesn't use that shared access signature to connect has no access to this data. Okay? Does that make sense? So not only does it require that username and key, but it requires that additional level of security of what's called a SAS, a shared access signature. How do you create that, right? So, so let's fire that up. Let me open file, data files in Azure, right? Okay, so when I create my credential, instead of the credential being based on the storage account username and key, I'm creating the credential based on a shared access signature to blob storage, right? So how do I create that? You can use some third-party tools, and the best one that I have found to use that is the best is what's called Azure Management Studio. This is from Redgate, right? One of the great sponsors here, right? You can use things like Cloud Storage Studio. I think Visual Studio, I think, will actually let you create one. This is the best one, right? The way to do this is just go into the container that you want to use for a backup, right mouse click, and say access policies. There's my access policy, right? So I define an access policy, call it, this is a test, give it a start date and end date, and tell it what credentials do I want, okay? Easy, okay? I create that. That makes sense? So I've just defined my shared access signature, step one, right? It can be time-based, it can be open-ended, it doesn't matter, but this says what access do I have and how long does this work for, right? I then go in, step two, and say generate the URL. I'm going to from an access policy, and this is a test. And if I go into manage policy, whoops, not that one. If I click next, so I'll pick the policy I want to generate this with and click next. It gives me this, right? And there is my shared access signature. I need this key, okay? Because that's the key I need. So if I go back here, okay, there's the key. There's the shared access signature, and this is the key that I just copied out of that dialogue. Make sense? Got to create the shared access signature, and then I use that shared access signature here. Okay, so Perfect, right? So what I do here is I say create credential. And let's see, I'm doing this to Northeast, right? So before I run this, let me go over to Northeast. Da, 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 da. Northeast, and I'm going to DB files. So let me go to DB files. No blobs, right? So the demo gods are with me. All right, let's go. So let me create a credential. This will be a new credential called shared access signature. Done. All right, so I can see my credentials. I should have two credentials here now. The two I created, there's the first one in the first demo, and here's the new one, shared access signature. Okay. So let me create my database now. Okay. Everybody cross your fingers. Woohoo, come on. Yes, question. Yes. So the question is, I created it through a third-party tool. Are there any Microsoft tools to create that shared access signature? So I think you can use Visual Studio because you can work with blob storage through that. So I think you can use Visual Studio, right? 2012 or 2013. There you go. So it's done. So we should be able to go out here and let's just refresh this. Right, and what I did while it's refreshing, I just said, look, create my database, and same thing. All I'm saying is instead of on disk, I said put my file names here. So I want my data file and my log file in storage. Right? That's all I did. So if this is refreshed, there they are. You guys see that? So there's my log and my data file, right? 200, right? So you know, again, just very simple, just T-SQL. All I'm doing is saying, you know, all we're doing is we're changing the on-prem disk to point to a URL. That's all we're doing. Okay, does this make sense? Right? Fairly easy, right? But nothing too hard, right? And at that point, I can go, okay, great. And it works like a database because it's still managed. Let's go refresh. Right? So that was TestDB. There's TestDB, right? So it still looks and smells like a database, right? And if we go look at the properties of that, this is kind of interesting. This might take a second to come up. But again, let's talk late while it's, well, okay, oh, there we go. That was quick. All right, so let's look at what do the files say. There's my files, right? So I'm just pointing to the cloud. But it's a database because I can say, like everything else, I have options of that database. I have permissions on that database. It's just my MDF and LDF are up in the cloud. Woo, big deal, right? It's awesome. To me, this is awesome, right? I love this because, again, just like you asked in the back, latency, right? That is going to be that might be an issue, okay? Why would we do this? Let's talk about the whys real quick. Again, very similar to the first one. Near bottom of storage, again, because it's in there, I get the three redundant copies automatically, right? So I get that high SLA, no provisioning, no management, things like that, right? I can still do backups from there. I can do whatever. I mean, I can still use that same technology in the first scenarios to back up my database. That doesn't matter. Yes. The mirror? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, right. And realistically, if I wanted to, again, I haven't tried this, but you could still set all, you know, for the always-on technology. Sure, have at it. Right. I would think you could do that too. Right. But I think there's certain benefits to that. The thing to do is now test it and try it and see what your latency is. Right. It'd be kind of interesting to see that. We have quite a few people trying this to see what's my latency. Maybe for mission critical stuff, maybe not, but maybe if there's some things that, hey, I need that high SLA, great, go, right? Things like that. So that's number three. We got 20 minutes, so I think we're doing good here. All right. Additional considerations can be combined with the delay durability to reduce latencies. So again, I think here's a way to do to reduce latencies. So this is a setting. I forgot about this slide, actually. You can set and delay, so improve your durability and latency by set delay durability equal to allowed, forced, or disabled. This has an effect on how latency, the effect on your latency in when talking and writing to the database, right? All right, let's go on to the SQL Server DR. Okay, this is an interesting one too, because this is why I asked earlier, how many people spend a lot of money on a duplicate data center, right? And this is the DR scenario, okay? This was introduced in 2012. This is the one out of the five. This is the one that you could do in 2012. But we're going to talk about it in terms of 2014, right? This is the ability to say, I don't want to have to spend a lot of money on my second data center, right? I want to use my DR. I want to put my DR in the cloud, right? I think there's benefits to that, and let's look at those, right? So, things like on-prem, we're not asking you to move everything up into the cloud. We would never do that, right? Unless you want to. But we would never say, take your entire SQL environment and put that in the cloud, right? But what we are asking, because there's certain benefits to that, to say, consider using the cloud as a DR, as a disaster recovery scenario, right? Because like I asked earlier, you guys are spending a lot of money on that second scenario that is just sitting there underutilized, right, until something happens. And how often does something happen that causes a failover, right? Great. How about having that DR in the cloud? And we'll show you how that works, okay? So in this scenario, I've got my primary and my second and multiple secondaries on-prem, but I may have one of those secondaries in the cloud. And that one is domain joined to my on-prem data center, right? And this is the benefit of that, is because since it's domain joined, I can either automatically or manually fail over and still be up and running if something happens to my on-prem domain, right? So what is it? This is the ability to say, all right, like in the picture, I still have my on-prem environment. We're not asking you to change that or move it. Just create a secondary or take one of the existing secondaries and put that in the cloud, right? So again, just like you brought up, political considerations, right? Can I not put something outside, you know, the borders of my country? But the benefits are lower TCO, right? Because instead of having this underutilized machines just sitting there, I have this VM that's maybe costing me a few dollars a month that's waiting to get failed over to, right? And I don't have to worry about managing that. Let Microsoft do that, right? So there's certain benefits to that. On the flip side, though, I can do the flip side. Most people aren't interested in this, but bring it up just as a scenario. I can have my primary and secondaries in the cloud, and then one of those secondaries on-prem, right? Most people are doing the first. I don't want to move anything to the cloud, but let me fail over to that if I need to, right? So the technologies supported in this are availability groups. Someone brought up database mirroring, so I can do availability groups with 2012, 2014. I can do database mirroring, and I can do log shipping in this scenario. Most people don't use, anybody use log shipping here? Most people don't, right? But okay, a couple of you, right? But most people are doing database mirroring and availability groups. Who has used, anybody set up availability groups here? Sweet. You know the benefits then over log shipping, right? Sweet. One wizard, here's my databases that I want to do always on with. Done, right? Very simple. I get multiple secondaries. I get readable secondaries. Right, zero data loss if I'm in sync mode. There's plenty of benefits of using always on and availability groups, right? So how do I do this? This is really nice, right? The way to do this is, there's two ways, right? There's one way, and there'll be a second way here in the coming months. This scenario requires a VPN device because you have to domain join this VM in the cloud to your on-prem domain. Only logical, because you're going to set up an availability group, right? And it needs to replicate, so it has to domain join. It is so super simple, right? So on my desk in my office at Microsoft, I have a server and some VMs. I have on the desk is a Cisco 5505 VPN device, cost me $300, right? I then created my on-prem domain, created my VM, configured that to run through the VPN device. I now have a VM running that is in the cloud that is domain joined to my on-prem domain. Took me probably a couple hours at most, right? The hardest part was configuring the VPN device, right? That was because you're configuring, right? But at that's the easiest thing to do, right? So you configure that, and you're going. And we'll actually jump out and do a demo of that, right? There are several tutorials, okay, that will walk you through this, right? There is one. I don't think that's the link, but I'll make the link available. There is one link that is a huge blog post, right? If you copy that blog post and paste it into Word, it is 98 pages, okay? But it walks you through step by step by step on how to set this up. If you mess this up, you're in the wrong business, okay? You cannot mess this up. It's got pictures and everything, right? It is so easy to do. The only thing it does not do is show you how to do the VPN device, right? But that's that. You'll get your IT guy and, okay, configure this, done, right? But at that point, you've got this DR scenario, okay? So basically on-prem, I've got my primary and multiple secondaries. I've got a secure VPN tunnel to my one VM that's running in Windows Azure that is domain joined to the cloud. Done, right? So when I set it up, I've got it. So if something happens, I just log into the VM in the cloud, manually fail over, and my users are still up and running, right? That is a lot less expensive and a lot more appealing to me as an IT guy, right? Because I'm not paying for this full data center. And for the benefits of Azure, I've got one VM running there, and if I need to, I can log in, create multiple instances and bigger sizes of that VM and to support my load, right? So, quick question, pop quiz. How long does it take you to spin up a new SQL Server box on-prem? Couple hours, day, few hours, if you have the box, right? Anything else? One guy said 30 minutes, and I'm like, you lie. No way, right? How long does it take me, if I have this SQL VM running in Azure, how long does it take me to add boxes to that or increase the size? Huh? Three clicks. About 30 seconds, right? 30 seconds, three clicks. Log into the portal, new size, multiple instances, done, right? So is this not starting to sound a little more appealing than this high cost data center, sitting the redundant data center sitting there? I have this, I could basically spin up, this VM could be a small instance of SQL running. And as soon as I have to fail over, I log in, do a manual failover, increase the size, give me multiple instances, in about 2 minutes, I have in maybe two minutes what I would have had on a duplicate data center on-prem. When I recover my data center on-prem, I just give everything back and I just pay for the resources that I use, right? That is the benefit of Azure, right? Sweet. All right. So let me show you how this works. Okay. So. I don't need this anymore. I'll just keep it running just in case. Oh, sorry. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, switch over. Yeah. I don't know why it does this, so I apologize. All right. So what I have here in the cloud, I have a, let's scroll down here to, I think, virtual networks. Sorry, all items, virtual networks. Networks. So I have this network. It's called Scooter DR. And this network is basically a network where I went and said, all right, I'm going to create a new network. Let me go here. Oops. Click on configure. Right. And so I have this network. And this network, basically in Azure, I have my own little network going. Right. And in that network is I have a couple subnets. This is my own network. If you go create a network, you do not have access to that network. This is my network. And the only people that have access to it is the people that I give access to, right, from a security standpoint, right? There's my network, right? And I also said, okay, let me go back, and I'm going to configure a local network. So there's my local network. So there is there's my cloud IP address. There's my VPN gateway out from my office, right? There's my subscription. And there's my DNS server, okay? So there's my Scooter DC. That's my box sitting under my desk. So then let's go back to virtual networks. In here, If you look at the virtual networks, in that virtual network, I have Scooter 3. So I have this virtual machine. That is a SQL Server. That's a virtual machine running SQL Server 2012 running in Windows Azure, right? That is that one virtual machine. That machine belongs to that virtual network, okay? So what I did is I created my on-prem. I then went in to, let's go to virtual network, into this. I then domain joined. I then, when I created that VM, and I set up this whole Cisco VPN, so I've got that connection. And I know I have a connection because in the portal here, my gateway and my VPN are communicating. That's what this shows, right? So my Scooter DR local network is communicating to my local network. My Scooter DR is my my cloud network. It is communicating to my local network through the VPN device. I have connectivity. I have communication going. I can see how much data is going in, how much data is going out over this IP address out, right? Sweet, right? So then once I had that connection, I just logged into that VM in the cloud, and then just like I would on-prem, just domain joined that to my on-prem domain. That VM now is domain joined to my domain. Okay, so I can go in here and log in to Scooter SQL 3. Minutes left. Plenty of time. Oh, wrong password. Come on. Why? So either the network's funky or I'm typing my password in wrong. Come on. There we go. I just typed in my password in wrong. All right, so we'll take 2 more minutes on this demo, and we'll do the last one. All right, what do you guys think so far? Yeah, maybe, no. Cool, want to play with it. What's that? A lot of options. Definitely a lot of options there, right? And its benefits. All right, cool. So let's do this. Minimize that. Let me open a command prompt. So I just RDP'd into my VM running in the West US data center, right? And domain joined to my domain under my desk. So I can say ping Scooter DC, which is the domain controller under my desk, right? We have a reply. Awesome's good. If I do IP config all, let's see, make this bigger, right? You'll see that it is domain joined, right? corp.scooter.com, that's my domain, so, right? Perfect, okay? So let's go here, let's fire up. Didn't want to do that. Let's go SQL Server Management Studio, and while that's firing up, what I'm going to do, so I have my domain controller, and if you're familiar with clustering and Windows Server Failover clustering, you have to have a kind of a failover cluster node because it's that core mentality. All right, so I've got my domain controller, my server cluster node, and SQL 1, SQL 2 on-prem. So while that's firing up, I'm going to RDP from here into SQL 1. Okay, and I'll show you why in a second. So let me connect to that. Move that over. All right, I don't need that anymore. Let me remote into SQL 3. Oh. So there's SQL 1, right? Minimize that. Okay. So I'm connected here. So while I'm connected into SQL, while that's booting up, let me go into my, no, I don't want to reboot yet. Wait till my demo's done. Then you can reboot. All right, so there's always on availability groups, right? So there is my replicas. So I've got SQL 3 is a replica, SQL 1, SQL 2. There's my databases, right? And it says synchronizing state, right? And I can look at, if I right mouse click on this, I can look at the dashboard, right? So all this is through SQL 3, right? So it shows the state of my, right, synchronizing. There's my, I can start the failover wizard I want, but let me go back here and let me go into this box. So what I'm going to do is that's running. Okay. I can also look at this. Again, I'm on SQL 1. I just RDP'd into SQL 1. Look here. There's my availability groups. So this says, if I look at this one, show dashboard. Come on, expand. So this shows, see the difference here, this is synchronized, where the other one is synchronizing. Right, so let's look at the dashboard here. Right, so this is a little, gives me a little more information, right? So the availability group is healthy. The failover mode is automatic. That's because on-prem, it's going to automatically fail over to, from SQL 1 to SQL 2. It will not automatically fail over to the cloud, right? That's for my manual failover. There's my there's a bunch of information about this, right? So there's all my additional information about the cluster, right? So what I'm going to do here is I'm actually going to open a query window. And let's run a query, okay? So let me jump back here real quick to SQL 3. Let's run a query and say, come on. Come on. All right, MyDB. So what we're going to do is say insert into, I can't remember the column names here. Come on. Okay, insert into my table. Values, oops, let's do the correct values, we'll call it, actually let's do this, let's figure out what's there. Select star from my table. All right, so let's, we're looking at the values first. All right, what? Oh yeah, thank you. It'd help if we were in MyDB1, wouldn't it? Okay, so there is... Oh, did I call it my... Yeah, you're right. Sorry. My table. Thank you. All right. So Scott, Drew, Brian, Grant, Diana. We're going to add... throw me in a name. What's... Huh? Something I can spell. Huh? Joe. Thank you. I can spell Joe. Right? All right. We'll throw out Joe. All right. So we're going to insert into... that's almost not funny, right? Because all these names, I'm like, okay, can you spell that, please? All right, Joe. Okay, so before we run, okay, oh, this is, we're on SQL 3. Yes, so there is, oh, we're not going to insert that here. Okay, so we're going to take that. So there's, Joe's not in here, right? So let's go back to SQL 1. No, not yet. All right, let's go to... my DB1 and do the same thing. Select star from my table. Okay. We should see the same things here. Right? Same ones. But now let's insert Joe here. Right? We're going to insert into, again, this box is under my desk in Redmond. Right? Let's insert that. One row. Let's go back. So there's Joe. Okay, let's go back to SQL 3 in the cloud and select from table. There's Joe. Yay! Right? Yeah. So this is always on availability groups synchronized between on-prem data center and the cloud, right? And the benefits of this are sweet. I don't have to pay for another data center. And if something fails over, I can log into this VM, do a manual failover, right? So in this case, if something happened to my on-prem domain, go in here and just start the manual failover, right? And then at that point, I can say, go into the Azure portal and increase the sizes and the number of VMs to support the load. Done. And then the cost for that is just, you know, how many VMs I have, what their size for that duration that I have those. Then when I'm done, I can scale back down to that one small instance, right? Okay, sweet. So let's keep going because we have 8 seconds left. Okay, yeah, my time's up. What's that? I am talking fast. All right. Why, again, things like, if you're familiar with this, if you were watching the news from from about a year ago, the East Coast, right, we had this hurricane that came up and hit, slammed New York. Hurricanes never make it that far. They always hit Texas or Florida or something like that. This one decided, I'm going to New York, right, and wiped out New York, right? Now, everybody all had their data centers there, and they were down for a while, right? So this is for, look, I can't control if something happens to my on-prem data center, but I can certainly recover from that because I have stuff running in the cloud, right? Plus, from an ops cost and a hardware and a price cost, it's much cheaper for me, right? Okay, and why, again, integrated high availability disaster recovery, things like that, right? All right, let's not get into that. Migration, let me just get into this. Let me just show you the demo on this. Let me just wrap up with this. So first of all, show you back up with this. Keep changes. Let me fire up SQL Server here. So I'm going to connect locally, and I'm going to pick a database. So I'm going to do Contoso, for example, and just I won't walk through the entire demo, but I will show you the. If this doesn't take too long. Come on. Maybe I'll just fire it up here. Come on. My box needs more memory. That's what it needs. It's 8 gig. It can't be that bad. Yeah. Yeah. All right. I don't want to hold you up. So let me just do this. Let me go back in. Oh, there we go. All right. So Contoso, right mouse click, tasks. We cannot make it any easier for you. Deploy database to Windows Azure SQL Database and deploy database to Windows Azure VM. Right? This is from a migration standpoint. So if I were to click on any one of these, it's like someone said, a three click process. So if I have a SQL Server running in Windows Azure Virtual Machine, next, connect, finish. So I'm not going to walk through the wizard, but same thing. Backs it up, restores it into the VM. It makes a connection to the SQL in the VM, and I'm ready to go, right? It makes migration and it makes getting to the cloud, you know, onboarding to the cloud much easier. If I want to do a test, like if I want to spin up a test environment, right? Again, how long does it take you to spin up a SQL box for QA or testing? Too long. It takes me 2 clicks and about 2 minutes in the cloud. I want to get my database up there. Bam, done. So in about 2 minutes, in about less than 5 minutes, I've created a VM and migrated my database to the cloud for testing or for QA, right? To do some testing, I'm all ready to go, right? Now, this was the only, let me just wrap up by saying this, right? Tasks. This one, deploy database to Windows Azure SQL Database, that was available in 2012. This one is available in 2014, right? It's new to 2014. It is a quick way to say, I want to do some testing or start playing with the cloud, right? You don't have to worry about it. We make it very easy we call it lift and shift. Get my database on-prem, migrate it to the cloud. Very easy, right? 3 clicks, depending on the size of the database, the size of the database, it may take a few minutes. If I were to do Contoso, the whole migration process would take less than 30 seconds. And that's pretty easy, right? And it will create the database for you. You don't have to go pre-create the database. It will create the database for you, right? Okay. So with that, let me just say the following. Why would I be able to do this? Because it's cool. Right? All right. So with that, again, platform. Evaluate. Thanks for coming. Appreciate it.
And adapt quickly, no matter what comes your way.